So much news, so little time. It's the news according to me. Well, a fine, happy Tuesday morning to you. It's November 23rd, 2021, still. About 8:15 Eastern Standard Time here in the United States. We have, I didn't have a show yesterday. I did have a show over the weekend, a quick show about some of the events that are taking place. I did have a show on Friday, I believe, if I remember right. I think I did. Pretty sure I did. I can't remember if I did or not. Probably, maybe I didn't. I don't know. And I was traveling on Friday. And yesterday I was supposed to be home by noon. Well, the first flight I was supposed to be on was delayed. They were saying it was delayed 30 minutes, and there wasn't even a plane there yet. At the time of departure, there wasn't even a plane in the gate yet, or on the ground. I guess it was coming from a hangar. The hangar doors weren't even open. It's like, yeah, this isn't going to work. We're not going to depart in 30 minutes because we have to, you know, bring the plane over here, board. Crew has to do all their stuff. So I'm thinking this is not going to go well. And I had a connection in Chicago. So, long story. To make a long story even longer, which is what I do. I take a story that really shouldn't even be told, let alone be, you know, a quick story. And then I stretch it out into meaningless drivel. I'm learning this technique. Apparently, you can be president and do this. But Joe Biden does this all the time. He just drones on about drivel stuff. Nobody cares. He makes stuff up as he goes. Back when I was driving an 18-wheeler, a big rig, and I went right from there. I drove it. I had a delivery to NASA, and I took it over to NASA, and they said, hey, can you fly this spaceship for us? We just need a guy to throw in there. You can just fly the spacecraft for us. And he did that too. I know why all of you tune in. I understand why those of you who listen. I don't understand why there are so many people who listen to this show. I really don't. It amazes me. But I do appreciate it though. Somewhat. I do appreciate the fact that you listen to this podcast. I appreciate that you share it and you download it. Downloading is a big deal actually with podcasts. Even if you just download it and throw it away, that actually helps me out quite a bit in terms of numbers. And I appreciate those of you who do that because I get a pretty accurate record of downloads. I don't get a necessarily accurate number of listens because there's apparently some weird algorithm stuff that doesn't show up on some of the platforms that people listen on or whatever. I'm not sure exactly how that works. It depends on how it's shared, I guess, or something. I don't know. All I know is there's a lot more people listening than some of my records show. And because there's even sometimes more downloads than there are people listened, which is odd. So anyway, I don't have a sponsor, nor do I necessarily want one, unless you're going to, you know, pay me big bucks to do this. And the show is going to be totally different. It's going to be, you know, a lot better content. I could probably pay somebody to give me show prep. But then I might start sounding like every other show out there. I'm not sure that's even good. I don't know. I'd have to toss that one around. If you just want to pay me money to be me, I'm willing to take that. Just go ahead and send me some money. That'd be great. You know, got to spare a couple thousand bucks laying around. Go ahead and send it over. Just send it on over. Yeah. Or if you got some crypto you want to give me, I'd take crypto. Sure. Crypto's better than nothing. But I know why you tune in. I know why you listen. I know why everybody listens. I'm starting to wonder if I should put this segment at the end of my show so that everybody hangs around and listens to the whole thing. Because I know that a lot of you tune out. As soon as I tell you this, you're probably just going to shut the... Because that's the only reason you tune in is to find out what's in my cup. I know that's what it is. I have... this morning I have vanilla chai. Pacific Island vanilla chai. which I'm sure it comes from the Pacific Islands. And I put a little bit of Cinnabon creamer in there this morning. My little cup. I have a custom-made cup. Well, the cup itself isn't custom-made, but the print on the cup is custom-made. It's got the name of my boat on there. That's important. In the wintertime, when a boat is on sitting up on the hard, it's important to keep the boat in mind. That way it doesn't feel quite as lonely. So I do things to remind myself that spring is coming. And, you know, in about 6 months, it'll be on the water again. Maybe a little less than that. No, about 6 months. Actually, it's going to be, not even 6 months. It's ridiculous. We don't have much of a season here. I really need to move south where I can just keep the boat in the water all the time. I'd probably never use it. Sad. But up here, you know, you put the boat in the water for 3 months. Everybody uses their boat like crazy because they know they can only use it for 3 months. And then, you know, they park it for 9 months out of the year. That's worth it for, you know, what is it, $10,000, $20,000 a year to do that? It costs about $1,000 every time I take it out to sail it. So the, do the math on that. So yeah, I've got that segment out of the way. There's a lot of stuff going on in the news. Let's talk about the news since that's what this is about. It's according to me, anyway, that's what the news is about. There's just a whole lot of stuff going on. I wish I could have got a show in yesterday because there was a lot of content that was going on, a lot of stuff that was going on yesterday, or actually stuff over the weekend. Of course, this whole Kyle Rittenhouse thing is just continuing to fester. And the media is still doing their job of twisting and maligning, defaming. What else do they do so well? They're still calling Kyle a murderer. They still say that these two men who were killed were murdered. Apparently, you know, there's, and of course, you know, even Joe Biden didn't really come out with a very strong message on this. Not that I expected him to. I'm not sure he even paid any attention to what was going on. He's just getting the talking points. He's not listening to anything that's going on. The narrative, again, of course, is the whole state lines thing. Crossing state lines with a gun. Picked up a gun, crossed state lines. You know, the state line was a mile away from him. He worked in that town as a lifeguard. It's not like, you know, not like there's a border crossing. Like he snuck across the line. He snuck across state lines. He didn't take any main roads. He took these back roads, these country roads, to get across the line there so that nobody would catch him. I don't know how many people cross state lines every day, but it's in the millions. You know, and then we have individuals, you know, now think about this. What the media does. The sad part about this, you know, what happened in Kenosha. Now, bear with me here for a moment as I explain this whole thing. Kenosha happens, and of course there were people, you know, if you hear the whole story about what all happened there, the place was a war zone, it was ridiculous. Kyle, you know, whether he should or shouldn't have been there, whether he should or shouldn't have had a, you know, an AR-15 style rifle. That's all up for debate. But, you know, then there's the question of, well, who should have been there? And why weren't they there? Those are some questions you could ask. And then we have the issue of Waukesha. I know a lot of people pronounce that, the name of that city, different ways. I was in Milwaukee the other night. I spent a lot of time in Wisconsin. Trust me on this. Waukesha. You want to know how to pronounce it? The event that took place there during the Christmas parade. Don't watch the video. It will make your stomach turn. What happened there, the news media is trying to downplay, not even talk about as much as they can. Initially, when it first happened, of course, as soon as they started getting more details about what happened, even when the details were rolling in and they knew the details, they were not giving you the whole story. We have a media that is absolutely the enemy of the people right now. And I have not said that, really. I've felt that and I've thought that. I've wondered about that. I've heard it said by other people. I've now come to settle on the fact that the news media in this country, by and large, for the most part, is the enemy of the people. They have a political narrative, and that is at the top of their agenda. And again, it comes back to this whole thing of the end justifies the means. When the end justifies the means, that means that they'll do anything to get their end done. And the end conclusion is they want. I think a lot of people are rushing blindly towards socialism and communism. This Marxist, Leninist utopia, centralized government idea. I think that they all seem to think that they're doing this for the people, and this is all for this is all for our good. Much like this vaccination thing. I was really going to hit hard today on the vaccination thing because of what's happening in Austria, and because of what's happening in some areas that are highly vaccinated now. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the numbers. And there's some people who are throwing some things around out there, some numbers stuff it's true what they're saying. However, they're not taking into account some of the things that are obvious math in terms of percentages. And so there's some issues on both sides of this thing that are a little bit disconcerting in terms of the way people are mishmashing the numbers. However, there is plenty of room to be concerned about what's going on with the numbers. So I'll try not to trip down that road. Typically all roads lead to COVID eventually. Seemed like, on this show. And I'll try to stay away from that for a minute because there are some other things I want to cover. One is the, so this fellow, I'm not going to mention his name because I don't want to give him any glory. The fellow, this animal, this depraved individual, who took this SUV, drove it through a parade, and deliberately was aiming the vehicle at people. It's not like he was trying to get away from another crime and just happened upon the parade route and just happened to be stumbling across people. He was aiming the car at people. And certain other individuals, you could tell he tried to miss. You can't watch the video and not see that this is intentional. And if you watch it in full speed, it's unbelievable. Then you start learning about the background of this guy. If you learn anything about the background of this guy, you'll understand what his motivation is. Now, I want to try to lead this into something else that I've been hearing from the mouths of several individuals who are leaders in the black community. there has been an alarming uptick, first of all, in the rhetoric from the news, which seems to bolster and support and encourage the idea that the white man is your enemy, all white people are racist. And it's to the extent that when I go to a community that is predominantly, let's just say I'm not in the, I'm in the majority in their community, I'm kind of amazed that I am treated well at all. That anyone will talk to me or smile or say hello or treat me like a human being. Because the rhetoric that's out there right now, in many areas, is that, a white man is the devil, and they need to be eliminated. They are the problem. And that's what I hear. And I'm kind of amazed and surprised sometimes in some areas where we can just all get along, and everybody just, I go to McDonald's and I can order food and whatever happens there. I'm kind of amazed at that, I guess. So there is some hope, I guess. However, there is this sector of that culture that is being indoctrinated and motivated by the things that they're seeing and hearing and some of the teachings that are out there. So you have this individual in a van who has all kinds of anti-white rhetoric on his social media pages. He has done rapping videos or whatever you want to call them. I'm not talking about Christmas rapping. Extolling the virtues of killing white people, getting rid of whitey. And so you have this mentality in this guy. Of course, I don't know whether he was on something at the time or what was going on. I don't know if there was a stabbing earlier that he was involved in. But initially, the news media wanted to excuse this guy and say, see, the thing is that over the scanner, this guy left his ID in his SUV when he took off running. When he abandoned the vehicle, he left his ID in the vehicle. They had a pretty over the police scanner. They shared that information, and of course, I think the vehicle was also registered in his name. And the news media had that. I mean, news organizations record the scanners 24/7. That's how they find out about stories. That's how they get their scoop, if you will. They show up on the scene of something going down. And they had this information, but they didn't share it. So they knew who this guy was, potentially. And they started, even after it was, because it wasn't officially reported yet who the person of interest was. Then they started making excuses for this guy. Well, he was fleeing he'd been involved in a stabbing, attempted stabbing or a stabbing of some kind. He was fleeing the scene and he just took a wrong turn and went down through this parade route. Yeah, I don't think so. The sad part about this is that they're going to try to disappear this story. If this would have been a white man, and this is, they always like to play this game, this straw man thing. Well, if Kyle would have been a black man, okay, let's talk about that for a minute. Because if this would have been a white man driving through a BLM crowd, parade, protest, BLM parade, yeah, BLM protest, as they call it, riot, whatever you want to call it. If that would have been the case, and he would have killed 5 people and injured 40, or more. My guess is the death toll is going to go up because there's some people in critical condition at this point. I mean, he was mowing down old ladies and children. indiscriminately. This is the definition of terrorism, by the way. And he had a political, if you want to put the politics into it, there was a political reason for why he was doing it. By the way, he was supposed to be in jail, but the mayor, I guess it was the mayor, had this, he was real proud of himself because he had this bail system to let people out. He was out on a $1,000 bail. And that's why he was out running around. Good idea, guys. It's a great idea. Yeah, I think the mayor should be sued for that, my opinion. City should be sued. Somebody should be sued. You know, let the guy out, then you're responsible for what he does. That's what they do to you. You know, if you accept responsibility, sometimes they let somebody out on under the direction or under the protection or guidance of someone else. That person takes responsibility for what they do. I think that a person who lets them out should take responsibility. So they always like to play this game. What if it was a black man? Well, here we have a black man mowing down white people. What's going to happen? Well, he was just acting out because, you know, white people, it's the white people's fault. And there's already people on MSNBC, some commentators and some pundits that are saying, oh, poor white people. That's exactly the kind of rhetoric we do not need right now. That is the kind of divisive crap that keeps getting put out there that just shows no understanding of how this is going. How do they plan on healing this nation? There's no interest in their hearts on healing anything. They just want continued rhetoric, continued upheaval, because that gives them a story. It gives them a narrative. And they can continue on in that stuff. That's what keeps them going. They would just hate it if we all got along with each other and worked through our problems as individuals with each other. Because that's really what this amounts to. But they like to tag race onto everything. A white man shoots three white men, kills two of them, and it's a racial issue. Mark Levin recently had a really good report on what happened in Chicago since last weekend. Five or six people have been shot dead. I think 19 total were shot. Some of the drive-by shootings that have been happening, I'm not going to mention race in this, but guess what? When you're out walking down the street, random drive-by shootings. I'm not going to say who's shooting who, but it's becoming very obvious that the rhetoric is beginning to fester to the point where it's oozing out now. It's being expressed. Did you hear about any of it on the news? Did it make national news? If a black man shoots three black individuals, kills two of them, wounds another, do you hear about that on the news? Do they even go to jail? Maybe you haven't heard this story. In Chicago, there was recently two gangs fighting each other. Bullets flying everywhere. A couple people got shot. I believe a couple were dead. The prosecutor decided to drop all charges, not pursue the case, because the gangs were involved in mutual combat. Let that soak in for a moment. So these guys are still out on the street. No, you know, all kinds of laws were broken, but they're not going to charge them for anything. Now, do you think if that would have been a white gang against a black gang, and the only people who were dead were black people, what do you think would have happened there? And it could have been, and race would have had nothing to do with it. It might have been just over drug territory. What do you think would have happened? This is how this is the motivation. This is where this whole identity politics thing plays in and becomes a canker sore on the face of our society. So if they play this game, I call it the straw man game, where they say that, you know, if this would have been black. So we have these issues that go on all the time, and they just, you know, here's the thing. If Kyle would have been black, we wouldn't have heard about it in the news, and the guy would have been out on bail the next day. And don't doubt me on that, because this very thing has happened. There was a school shooting. Everybody always quotes, you know, the most recent thing was this guy was in a school in Texas, shot up the classroom, hit the teacher, was out on bail the next day because supposedly he'd been getting bullied. Of course, the police department came out and said, this is with a black police chief said, bullying had nothing to do with this case. This was a drug deal. There was a dispute over a drug situation. And this kid had been selling drugs. So, you know, but the media they just try to cover it up right away. We have a very biased news. Now, this leads into another side story. I've got some pretty good, fairly decent sources that I listen to that apparently have some inside information about what's going on at CNN. The reports are that CNN and MSNBC, both, but especially CNN, I guess CNN, there's going to be some mass exodus there, some resignations, and not because they want to resign, but because they're being asked to resign. There's actually a push from the higher-ups, people who are investors in that constipated news network, that apparently, they want to actually turn it back into a journalistic style news organization that just reports the news. When CNN initially started, actually just reported the news. I mean, there's always been a narrative. There's always been a way that they want to frame stories. That always happens in the think tank room before the report goes out. How are we going to report this? How are we going to spin this? A spin room, they call it. That's why there's even a show called The No Spin Zone. Of course, they talk about how they're going to spin it in The No Spin Zone. I think it was a Riley thing, O'Reilly. Who I'm not a big fan of. But there's always this spin thing going on. But I have it on good report that apparently CNN wants to go back to normal journalism and be trusted again. Because it's just all a bunch of commentators that are completely biased, completely hack job, and they realize that their ratings are terrible. They're losing revenue in buckets. And they're the laughingstock. And apparently that's what's happening now, is that we'll see what happens. But I think Anderson Cooper will probably always be there because his family's got money. Jake Tapper, you know, is probably the only person at CNN that's halfway decent. Once in a while, he actually asks some tough questions and reports on some things. Everybody else over there, they could be flushed down the toilet. And I don't think that they could just put on a dog show. And I think that they would probably get more views. A dog and a pony show, actually. I don't know, have you ever seen a dog and pony show? It's actually quite entertaining. It's quite much more so than CNN. So this brings me to the next point. This was kind of the CNN thing was kind of a side point. I don't know if any of you have been paying attention to some of the rhetoric that has been coming out, occasionally being kind of leaked out in the impassioned, embroiled speeches or comments being made by some leaders in certain black communities. In a church recently, and I'm not sure the location, I can't remember the location, so I'm not going to say where it was. It was just in a church. A Black Panther leader, I think actually the leader of the Black Panthers, I'm not sure. I'm going to try to look up and see who this guy is. Let's see what I can find here on the trusty DuckDuckGo. And my internet's a little slow this morning. Of course it is. Well, maybe I've got the wrong internet. What's going on? Maybe it's just my computer. The talk has been a little bit alarming. Let's find out. Who is the leader of the Black Panthers? As I believe this guy was speaking at a church and was talking a little bit, and he was talking about a militia. They keep talking about militias that are locked and loaded. Now, there was a school board meeting where an individual stood up and was talking about CRT, critical race theory. And he was defending it. He was saying he had an army of 1,000 people who were going to show up to defend it. Locked and loaded, he said. The Black Panthers individual said he had an army of 5,000 that were going to show up on this particular, whatever it was that they were protesting. I have also heard this from a few other individuals who have talked about, this is probably not going to give me who the leader is actually now, the Black Panther Party. National Archives, history, whatever it is. Debut of Dr. Huey P. Newton, bus spotlights. The Black Panthers was originally founded in October of 1966 in Oakland, California. The party was active in the United States between 66 and 82. The chapters were written in Ogden area. Yeah, it's just giving me history here. It's not really giving me who's in charge now. But yes, it still does exist. They almost make it look like it doesn't exist anymore here. I'll go to the Wikipedia, see if it's got anything there. Probably not, and I'm sure it's not. Of course, now they're all upset. The Black Panthers are all upset because BLM has taken over what they're doing. Here we go. While there are specific organizations such as Black Lives Matter Global Network that label themselves simply as Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement comprises a broad array of people and organizations. The slogan Black Lives Matter itself remains untrademarked by any group. Broader movement is and its related organizations. This is talking more about Black Lives Matter. This is all about Black Lives Matter, actually. It's not even about the Black Panthers. Interesting that they would be a part of that. But the concern is this militia, this idea that there are now armed individuals and that they're starting to organize as a militia. Now, of course, you won't hear the news media talk about those militias because, of course, they're okay. Black Panther Party is about Bobby Sayers. Yeah, there's nothing. Oh, leader. Huey Newton is supposedly the leader. It was founded in 1966. I don't know if he's the leader right now or not, or if this was the guy who started it. Yeah, Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton in October of 66. So there's nothing about who's leading it now. It's almost as if it doesn't exist now, and yet it does exist. This guy had a Black Panther logo on his shirt. There is a theology called Black Liberation Theology. It's not talked about much by people in the black community, in churches. The church, the real church, those who actually follow the gospel, really need to rise up and condemn black liberation theology. I kind of think that a lot of churches actually kind of are sympathetic to it or actually kind of believe it a little bit more than they would like to say publicly. It is a theology that is straight out of the pit of hell. I'll just put it that way. It is a twisted version of the gospel. It will lead to more upheaval, unrest, and division between white people and black people. And here's why I say this. I have said this before. The number one thing that is taught in the Gospels is that we forgive because we have been forgiven. We don't look for vindication. We don't look for vengeance. And unfortunately, that is what is at the heart of a lot of this. There's this vindictive, vengeful, take justice into my own hands mentality, philosophy, motivation. And it is seriously unnerving and goes against everything in Scripture. I have contended for a long time that the key to healing between white and black, the racial divide and any other kind of divides we have in this country, culturally, is that there needs to be forgiveness. If the white man has wronged you, you need to forgive them. If a black man has wronged you, you need to forgive them. That doesn't mean that you just kowtow to everything that they do from that point on. But there needs to be forgiveness in your heart and not vindictive vengefulness in your heart. That is very difficult, I understand. You know, Scripture says God's mercies are new every morning. He's merciful to us every morning. Every day is a fresh start with God. The past is the past. It's basically what he's saying is move forward, live in his mercy and grace. Accept his mercy for what it is. He's continuing to pour out mercy upon you. Doesn't mean we trample on it. Doesn't mean we take it for granted. And yet, the one thing he asks for of us, and you'll find this in parables, in Scripture, in many messages that Christ taught, the Messiah spoke of, he said, well, it's summed up in one thing. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. He said, if you will not forgive your brother, I will not forgive you. Don't think that you're walking in forgiveness if you can't have forgiveness in your heart for others. When the king called the individual in front of him who owed him a debt, and the king forgave him of his debt, and then that individual walked out and went after all the people who owed him money, and he was merciless. He threw them in jail, said, I'm going to throw you in jail until you can pay the debt. And the king found out what happened. He said, didn't I show you mercy? Why can't you show others mercy? I'm paraphrasing the whole thing. Probably botching it up. But that's the gist of the story. So that individual was thrown in prison. Forever. the you know, the thing that the king hated most was that people were not passing on mercy, that they were unjust after they had received forgiveness. They weren't willing to pass on forgiveness to others. And I think if we could, you know, just teach that in the churches now. And I think that there's a certain number of individuals out there in church leadership that really need to take a good hard look at where we're at here. To step up, to step forward, start taking some responsibility. And a good hard look at the Gospels. It's not just about what God can do for me and what he's going to give me and what I deserve. Recently I had a conversation with an individual. I have this conversation with this individual occasionally. And it's always the same conversation, and it's always the same blubber that comes out of his mouth. He's mad at God right now. He's obviously mad. And he'll say, God doesn't owe me anything, but I want some answers. I want to see some promises fulfilled. Just one. I was like, okay, how about you look up on the cross and see a man hanging there for you, and then ask if that's enough. Is that enough? Oh, you want more. His son hanging on a cross for you, and yet you're going to demand more from God than that. If you were physically there in space and time, for those few hours where he was scourged, nailed to a cross, and left hanging there until he gave up the ghost. If you were there watching that whole thing and realizing it was done for you, and then you had the audacity to shake your fist in the sky and say, but I want something more. I'm saying this because I know I've done the same thing. Like as if God owes me something more. But I have to come back to that thought. God doesn't owe me a dime. He spilled every drop of blood he had, he spilled for me. I'd say that's enough. When he said it's finished, it's finished. It's enough. I'll accept that. I'll just leave that there for a second. So the rest of the story is what's going on with Joe Biden right now. Let's talk about Joe. I know everybody likes to talk about Joe, our favorite president, the most popular president that's ever been elected, with the most votes of anybody ever received, as well as, you know, Donald Trump, who got the most votes from any Republican candidate ever, got more votes than any Republican candidate ever. And yet, Joe Biden got more. Because, you know, it was the most secure election ever. Nothing to see here. We won. Nothing to see now. So let's just be done with it. Move along. Some weird stuff going on. I have this reassuring news, though, this morning. I woke up and read this one article, and it said that Joe is reassuring the Democrat Party, the Democrats, that he's going to run again in 2024. He's reassuring them of that. You know, and you know how he is. He's always, you know, so truthful and says things that are factual. Is there any chance that the Taliban is going to take over? No, they have an army of 300,000 strong, the best trained army in the world. And boop, ya boop. He barely got the sentence out of his mouth and the Taliban had taken over. If you get these vaccines, you won't get COVID. Oh, whoops. Yeah, you will. Sorry. Well, if you get the booster, you won't get... Oh, oops. Yeah, you will. There are some places actually talking about a fourth booster now, by the way. Now, the reassuring thing, let me stay on this one topic, and then I'll move to COVID because I don't have much time left here. The reassuring thing is that Joe has come out and said that he's going to run again because we know now that it's not going to happen. That was the nail in the coffin right there. Him saying it was going to happen was the nail in the coffin. I'm going to try to look up something else here that Joe did. Strategic. Oil reserve. China. My understanding is that Joe, you know, he's opening up the strategic oil reserve. 5 days ago, China is releasing some oil from its strategic oil reserves days after U.S. invited it to participate in a joint sale. So China is also releasing oil. Now, this, I don't understand how this is working exactly. China releases oil from strategic reserves as energy costs rise. Biden announces U.S. oil release from strategic oil reserves. There's some kind of a China, India, Japan, and South Korea to join a coordinated effort to release reserves of crude oil to help tamp down rising gasoline prices. Now, here's the problem. We're trusting China to actually release this reserve oil. My understanding is China does not actually have much of an oil production facility of their own. I think primarily all their oil is imported. And I think that they import it mostly from Russia. So the question is, why isn't Russia involved in this as well? Russia has a huge amount of oil. So we're trying to combat OPEC. The problem is reserves run out. When you have something on reserve, that means you have a standby amount of oil that you constantly keep in your rotation. If you're releasing that, that means you're down on oil. Now, we can't just open up oil. There is some drilling, I guess, that's been allowed now in the Gulf of Mexico again. Some another company. But the oil has to be up a certain price in order for that to be doable, to make it feasible. There's a lot of oil reserves around the world that will not be tapped simply because the price of oil is not high enough. When it gets up to $60 a barrel, then they can say, okay, we can drill now. Problem is, it may not stay at $60 a barrel. And OPEC plays this game all the time. OPEC and there's other cartels now around the world that are actually more powerful than OPEC, but OPEC has a pretty good stronghold still on everything. It's insanity. This is insanity, what we're doing right now. We shouldn't be involved and embroiled in this situation of energy dependence. And yet here we are. We're here again. Presidents for 60, 70 years have been saying we're going to have the goal of being energy independent. And along comes a president who finally gets us there. And the next president, on day one, reverses all that. Because guess what? It's my backup water. Oops, oopsie, 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 whoopsie. Because on day one, he backs it all up. Because guess what? He wants to be involved in the negotiations with other countries. And that makes it, you know, that way we can pretend like we're friends. We can kowtow to them. Not be the bully in the room. Let's take a left turn and get off this subject because I'll just get mad. I'll get mad about something else. There's something else I want to get mad about. Kevin McCarthy on the House floor last week was in fine form as he spoke for like over 8 hours or something. I think he broke a record of some kind. I thought Rand Paul broke the record on filibustering. And oh, the Democrats were all mad at him. And at the end of the day, they passed the bill. Because that's the way Kevin McCarthy likes it. He likes to make it look like he's putting up the fight. And he went on for 8 hours and he was talking about this and made him, always stomped around and made himself look mad. He looked angry and said some mean things. Nobody will ever remember. Didn't call anybody a jihad. Jihad squad. I think Boebert spoke for 5 minutes and she said more in 5 minutes than Kevin McCarthy did in 8 hours. So McCarthy speaks and he's now the hero. This is the position. This is the epitome. This epitomizes the establishment Republican Party. This is what they want. This is how they operate. This is their MO. They want to just get by, just to get reelected. When they're not in power, when they don't have the majority, when they can't do anything, they love to talk. The talk is tough. Oh, we're talking tough. Oh, you're doing this and you're doing that. Oh, ooh, we hate this. Ooh, all the while they got their hand, you know, kind of turned backwards behind their back, and they're taking in the money. Once they get into power, all of a sudden, oh, we can't bring those votes to the floor because we'll lose the next election. Their spine complete. There's no spine. These are jellyfish people who like to. They love the position of being in the minority. It's almost as if they're winning when they're in the minority because they can pretend like they're tough. They can say all these tough things. And then when they get power, they're like, oh, wait, we weren't planning on being out here and leading anything. What do you mean? We don't know what to do now. We'd rather just chase the car. It's like a dog that chases a car. And then when the car stops, dog doesn't know what to do with it. Oh, there's the car. I got it. No, I don't know what to do with it. I wasn't really planning on catching it. That's just the chase I was interested in. Same thing with the whole establishment. Republican establishment. We like being the party of no. That way they can keep on going forward with their progressive large government thing, all the money flowing, and we can kind of tap into that a little bit. But oh, we don't, you know, oh, but we don't like it. But keep doing it. That's the Republican Party right there in terms of the establishment Republican Party. This is why the Republican Party needs to be reformed. Now, so does the Democrat Party, for that matter. The Democrat Party needs to turn into, like the Republican Party. The Libertarian Party, I really had some hope for, but we have a two-party system. There's no way that the Libertarian Party is ever going to change that. Now, if the Libertarian Party had some influence over one party or the other, in my opinion, I think the best option there is probably the Republican Party. However, there's issues there too, they're deep seated, very, very difficult issues. I mean, you got people like McConnell, McCarthy, all the Irish guys in there, Scottish or whatever they are. They got all those guys in there, and they're not letting go of power either. They're just as guilty as Nancy Pelosi, because they act like we can't do without them, we can't live without them. And yet they are the absolute epitome of big government establishment who's got their fingers into everything. McConnell's wife is Chinese. He has Chinese deals going on. And yet that's, you know, how is he going to come out and say anything about Biden and his China deals? Or John Kerry and his China deals, when McConnell himself has all kinds of China deals going on. All the backdoor deals that are, in my opinion, treasonous. But I digress. So, having said all of this, where do we go from here? Well, we go to the next show and we just talk about it again. Now, the reality of it is that all this stuff is to open our eyes, hopefully, to what's really happening on the planet. Now, I've seen some really encouraging things happening. I've seen some pundits on the left that I would have considered on the left, leftist progressives, who are seeing a change. They're seeing that they're disillusioned by the media. This whole Kyle thing, any time that they get something that gives them a lot of attention and then people realize they were lying to them, it kind of opens up. People start paying attention to that after a while. There's like, you guys are lying again. And they stop trusting the media. And actually, the media is like has one of the lowest ratings of trust right now that they've ever had in their existence, which is a sad report. People go to independent news more because of it. Now, for instance, the whole COVID thing. There's something called ADE. Antibody dependent what's the E stand for? Antibody dependent enhancement. Antibody dependent enhancement. Dr. Robert Malone talked about this a little bit, and I consider him to be a pretty good source. There's also some other people who've talked about it a little bit too. Now, the interesting thing about this, and what we need to understand is the type of reaction that people are having to, or what's happening with these vaccines. If you listen closely to the people who are dismissing the idea that that ADE is an issue with this mRNA vaccine, listen very carefully to what they say, because they are not comparing apples to apples, and they are not really talking specifically about this vaccine and what is happening with the numbers right now. What is happening with the statistics and the numbers are exactly what Dr. Robert Malone was concerned about. And the reason is because the vaccines are not using spike proteins, they're using cytotoxicity to combat the virus. This is why they wane. This is why they're not effective for very long, because the body fights off the toxicity thing. Now, I don't understand it all. I'm not going to get into it because I will probably say something wrong about it. But this is the reason why we need the booster, and we'll continue to need the boosters. And the problem with this is that we are working towards a position where the body's immune system actually will start to diminish. It will become dependent on the vaccine. Now, what it actually is, and is it Bengay fever, I think, or whatever, is it dengue fever, something like that. I don't know, some kind of river where this fever broke out, and there's like two or three different kinds of fever, of strains of this fever. And what happened was, if you had one strain and then you caught the other strain, you could actually, like, your body would not be able to fight off the other strain because it had antibodies for this strain, and it wouldn't. So it was antibody dependent. In other words, what that means is, and my understanding of it is that the virus actually won't attack you unless you have antibodies for another virus. Those antibodies actually help the other virus affect you. Now, what this means is that the vaccine could be setting us up for something else, either a variant or a different virus. That's the one thought. Now, I've heard some people who have tried to explain this away on some shows, because I've looked at some of the reports of people trying to explain why this is not a possibility with this vaccine. They'll talk about the virus. They won't talk about the vaccine. No, this virus won't do that. This virus, it can't, they'll talk about dengue fever and all that sort of, but And then they'll talk about the issues that were going on there with ADE. They do not talk about the effects of this vaccine in relation to ADE, because there's a different way that ADE can happen. And that is because of the cytotoxicity issue. And this is all more complicated than I'm willing to, the way I understand it, than what I've heard them say and what their concern is. Now, here's the number. Some of the people are quoting numbers, and I want to get back to this. They're saying, oh, now there's more vaccinated people in the hospitals. Well, this is all, if you had 100% of the population vaccinated, then everybody in the hospital who from COVID is going to be vaccinated. You're playing the numbers game of the higher populations. So that's not really a good example of, well, see, that just shows that because everybody's vaccinated. Now, if you have 80% of the population vaccinated, and eventually more than 80% of the people in the hospital are vaccinated, now we have a problem. Now, the vaccine has been shown to be very effective against keeping people out of the hospital. There's no doubt that's the numbers. Serious illness, in fact, some people don't even know they have it, asymptomatic, and they're carrying the virus around. That's kind of a dangerous thing, actually. However, the concern about the vaccine is that, what is it doing over time, and how many more boosters are we going to have? And they keep blaming the unvaccinated for this. Now, there are some areas that have high vaccination rates. Gibraltar is one of the highest. Israel actually has one of the highest vaccination rates nationwide. And yet they are still concerned about lockdowns and travel and all the other things that are going on. Because there's two different things that the media will talk about. They'll talk about cases and they'll talk about deaths. Now, if Trump was still in office... Now, strangely, since he's gotten out of office, they've all come out with these new, oh, we miscounted. We had 10,000 more cases of COVID, deaths in COVID than what we, there were 10,000 less, 10,000 fewer. We miscounted. We had 10,000 more than what we should have. So there's not as high of a death rate all of a sudden. There's not a counter down at the bottom of every legacy news media organization with the death toll cranking up. That was all theater. They were all doing that on purpose. We went from 200,000 to 400,000 like in three weeks because Joe Biden was just about to get into office and they had to crank up the numbers, you know, so that it looked bad coming out of the Trump administration. And then going into the, you know, Biden administration, they thought, well, this is going to drop right off because now we have the vaccine. We're in a perfect position to, well, it didn't work that way, did it? Here we are still almost a year later. And we're still talking about lockdowns, and now Fauci is saying that, you know, yeah, you have to get a booster. The definition of a fully vaccinated is going to be changing. It's always going to be changing. And here's my point on that. The vaccine may not be a 100% failure, but it is an abject 80% failure. When the vaccine first came out, everybody thought, this is it. We're going to stop it in its tracks. Now, I literally heard a politician the other day say, the booster is the answer to stopping COVID in its tracks. Well, we thought that was going to be the case with the vaccine itself. Shouldn't that have stopped it in its tracks? No, it did not. We thought the vaccine was going to keep us from getting it, keep us from spreading it, and that we would have herd immunity at some point and it would not be an issue and go away. That's what we all thought about the vaccine. That's why they had to change the definition of the vaccine word. Then we find out, oh, it doesn't last much more than about 6 months, and you need to get the booster. And yes, if you're 18 or older, you need to get the booster. You need to get the shot. My question is why? And why is there no, it's what's really bizarre to me is that there's no acceptance or... This is where it gets really eerie to me and why I think there's something more sinister going on. There's no acknowledgement of recovered people who have antibodies. There's no acknowledgement of that. Well, yeah, you just need to get the vaccine anyway, because it's going to make you even more resistant. I'm resistant enough. Why do you seem to think I have to leave? Now I have to reach a certain level of resistance. They're not going to stop until every single human being is vaccinated, and I don't quite understand that. Why the hysterical push to get a vaccine that really doesn't do what it was supposed to do? Now, initially, I thought that the whole thing was just money from, you know, Pfizer's making money on this, and Pfizer's going to turn, you know, the Moderna and Pfizer are turning around and paying their lobbyists, and the lobbyists, of course, they're paying the grease in the palms of the politicians. Don't get me wrong, that is happening. But there's something more about this. And it's really troubling me. And I don't know exactly what to think about it. Now, of course, you got upheaval in some countries that, you know, they're protesting. And of course they ignore that. Politicians don't care. You can protest all day long. They won't care about that. Do it anyway. They'll just arrest you, throw you in jail. You have the right to publicly to peacefully protest. Yeah, your signs are doing a great job. And here's a question for you. I think about this every time there's a protest, especially when it gets violent. First of all, when was the last time protests actually changed anything that you can quantify as having changed something? When was the last time that rioting has changed the minds of anyone? Again, you're a useful idiot. When you start rioting like that, you're a useful idiot. You're one of the people you're a pawn. You're being used politically either one way or the other. Either they're going to crack down on you and say, look at how we've cracked down on crime, or they're going to let it go and say, oh, look at how bad this is under this administration. That's the way we do it. The news media can play that either way, and they can spin whatever they want to spin, but they'll use it however they have to use it. I personally fear for Kyle Rittenhouse's life right now. I don't know how this guy gets through life without all kinds of continued death threats. And what's happening with the media again, they're continuing to call him a murderer, continuing to ramp up the rhetoric and the fire, the flames of vengeance and vindication and just lies, just flat out lies. Because they've, just like Trump derangement syndrome, they got themselves worked into a tizzy over stuff that wasn't true. And now they're doing it again. And there's a small young man involved. And I'm afraid that Kyle does not have the intellectual skills to deal with the kind of attention he's going to be getting in the next. He had an interview with Tucker Carlson. And he's saying some things. And I guess he said some things about Lynn Wood. Now, I just want a real quick comment on this. He said some things about Lynn Wood, that Lynn Wood wanted to keep him in jail so they can continue to raise money for him. And he wasn't raising money for Kyle. He was raising money for his defense fund, which Lynn was going to get. Now, some people like Lynn, and he talks about the Bible, talks about, you know, stuff all the time. I don't necessarily trust people who just... They can be real bold about that kind of thing, but sometimes I wonder how they're playing on the heartstrings of individuals, of a country. And they get their popularity that way. And I think there's some wacko individuals out there. And I think Lynn Wood is actually possibly, I don't know where this guy came from and what he's popular for, why he's considered to be some kind of great lawyer. But I would say the guy's more of a grandstand showboat. I don't know the guy. All I've seen is what he's said on some things, and he's kind of a loudmouth. I don't know. I don't necessarily care for nor did I trust the guy completely. I think he said some wacky things. So maybe some of them are true. I don't know. But he's, nonetheless, he's coming out back against Kyle, saying that, well, he's supposedly recorded all the conversations, and he's talked about Kyle and how they, Kyle told him that he loved him, and he loved Kyle, and all this back and forth, and I don't know. That's according to Lynn Wood. Doesn't seem like something that a young man would say to somebody, but I don't know. I don't know. Just doesn't make sense to me. So we'll see how this all pans out. But I'm concerned about Kyle because he's gonna end up putting his foot his ability to communicate and articulate things is good for an 18-year-old kid. But I'm concerned that he's not. The media's going to take whatever he says and twist it anyway. And he's walking through a minefield at this point. And I think that something's going to backfire on him. But hope he does well throughout this whole thing. We'll see what happens. But I'm concerned. So continue to pray for him. Pray for those around him. Pray for his mother, his family. Pray for the jury, the judge, all those involved in that case. Pray for this man who apparently sought to take justice in his own hands of some kind, his own personal justice thing, and mow down a bunch of people with his car. Pray for the people in Chicago who continue to shoot each other and randomly shoot individuals just because of the color of their skin or not. Pray for this nation. Pray for their leaders. Pray for the people who are involved in this whole thing with Joe Biden and Kamala and everything else that's going on with our leadership. The soul of our nation is in distress, and we just need to continue to be on our knees and intercede. Because it's Tuesday. That's why. Might have another show this afternoon. We'll see how it goes. I've got some things going on later this evening. Got a dinner to go to. Some other fun things I'm going to do this evening since I got a couple days off here. I got a couple days off, and then I got to go back to work on Thanksgiving Day, no less. Got to be traveling Thanksgiving Day. But, yeah, I'll be around. Who knows? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I will be. Maybe I won't. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Lord willing, I'll be back. So tomorrow or today or tomorrow, tomorrow morning for sure, there'll be a show at some point. Tomorrow at some point, there'll be a show. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. It's the news according to me, so you never know. You're just going to get what you get. You get what you pay for. God bless everybody. Have a great day. Stay true to the faith.